A few years back, my son Gabe and I were in Florida. We joined a group on a boat excursion to an island that had some beaches and a couple other things to see. There was a man there on this trip, on the boat with us, with his family, and we'll call this man Mr. Kingfish. Mr. Kingfish had an obvious bearing that he was used to being served, obeyed, and catered to. And I remember when he strutted up the gangway, empty-handed, followed by his demure wife, who was carrying several beach bags and the cooler. Their children boarded empty-handed and proceeded to be a general nuisance to everyone on board. Now, at the island, we dropped anchor on the windward side, and then we all walked across the island to the lee side beaches. And at the end of the time there, most of the folks made their way back to the boat a little early so as not to miss it or to hold things up, you know. And at the boat, we could swim, but we were all warned that on this side of the island, the current was strong. So stay close and be aware of where we were, because the water was too shallow for the boat to come and rescue anyone. The current would eventually sweep one down the shoreline about a half a mile and then out into open waters. But that was the place where predator fish waited for dinner. When it was time to leave, everyone got on board, except, of course, Mr. Kingfish, who was floating on a couple of those noodles, and he was being swept away by the current. Now, he had made such an impression on everybody on the boat that I think if they had put it to a vote, well, even the guy's wife went to the bow, grabbed a Coke, and sat down on the cooler and looked out to sea. Outside of the crew, who wanted to avoid a lot of paperwork, the only one concerned was his youngest boy, who was almost in tears. So they pulled up anchor, and they maneuvered the boat as closely as they could to him, but it was still some 100 feet away. And they told him he had to swim to us, and we would throw him a line. Now seriously, this is what happened. This guy, who himself seemed completely unruffled at the possibility of his demise, managed to offer up no more than 10 or 12 breaststrokes over the top of his noodle, and then he sat on the noodle in the upright as if he was in his chair at the office, and he said, "Nope, I can't make it. Come and get me." Well, you see, this is where secular people take unfair advantage of believers. You know, a boatload of atheists would have hit the throttle, cracked a cold one, and never given him another thought. Now, I know for at least one Christian on board, it was a moment of great temptation. But thank heavens there was a person on board offering unconditional love. The little boy was now in tears, and he was calling out to his father, "Daddy, you have to try. Swim, Daddy, swim." Hearing this, several men came to the stern and offered to swim a line out to him. The crewman thanked us, but said that he was the one who had to do it. He put two lines end to end, and he went out, and he retrieved the guy who made zero effort to pull himself in. Now look at some of the elements here. It would seem that the man in this story was living a very self-centered life. He didn't display much concern for those around him, and it was apparent that the authority in his life was that which he himself commanded. He failed to see or accept a serious warning, and he did what he was told not to do. He didn't keep himself strong enough on a daily basis to do what was needed to save himself. And in the end, he didn't accept being saved on someone else's terms. Rather, he commanded being saved on his terms and at the risk of another. But it must be noted that even this guy was loved by someone unconditionally. And finally, it has to be said that everyone there knew without question the guy had to be brought in. Now, I hope you can see where, in large part, these are things Jesus is addressing and teaching about in our gospel. It says in our gospel that Jesus is making his way to Jerusalem. Why? He's going there to save us. He's going there to die. This is going to happen God's way, not his way and not our way. He doesn't answer their question about how many will be saved. Instead, he tells them that many will not be saved because they will not be strong enough to enter the way that he offers. Well, how do we stay strong enough to meet a crisis or accomplish a difficult task? We exercise and we stay active on a daily basis, right? We keep ourselves in a state of readiness. And this is true of our spiritual lives as well. We exercise and stay spiritually active every day. And on the day we die, or that Christ returns, which is what Christ is talking about here, whichever comes first, what will be a moment of crisis for some will be a joy and a simple walk through the narrow gate for others. Spiritual muscles, like physical muscles, can grow slack. Then it becomes common to choose the easier pathways instead of the more difficult ways that ought to be taken. The more choices we make outside of the way of God's kingdom, the more unrecognizable we become as a disciple of Jesus. To the degree that one day God may say, "I tell you, I do not know you." And how shocking that will be for those souls. Eating and drinking at a table of the Lord does not make us disciples. Walking on the road he walked makes us disciples. Carrying our cross to Jerusalem to die makes us disciples. In a culture where the easy and pleasurable road is broad and encouraged, sticking to the narrow path makes us a disciple. Doing the things Jesus did keeps us strong enough to stay on the narrow path. Part of what makes this gospel tough to hear is the misinterpretation that God would slam the door in our face and exclude us. This is just the opposite of what Jesus is saying. God's door of mercy is open for everyone until that sobering day when the Master arises, declares the end of the age, the end of time, and the door is no more. Then those who, for whatever reason, have chosen to refuse the mercy of God receive what they have chosen. In the story I told you, just imagine for a moment then when Mr. Kingfish had drifted off and then refused to do what was necessary to be saved, imagine the captain declaring that the moment of departure had come, it was time, and the boat just sails off without him, going on its course. Imagine how the man would feel, realizing he was doomed, realizing his fate was sealed, and he had sealed it, realizing fully his choices and his mistakes, realizing his only hope was the mercy of another, and he had arrogantly refused it, more concerned for his own ego, realizing that he could indeed cry out for help, but it was too late because the others could no longer hear his voice. Jesus says there will be wailing and grinding of teeth on that day. Magnify this by infinity for those who, through their own choosing, find themselves headed for the eternity of hell at the end of time. Horror beyond human imagination. There are people who will accept salvation, but only on their terms, and not God's. To these people, the door to God's salvation appears to be closed. It's like someone trying to walk through a wall to get in instead of the door. The door is over here. No, this is the way I enter. The door is there. God does not want this for anyone. And we should never take all this lightly. We should stay on the narrow path and keep ourselves strong enough to enter the narrow gate. We know that God, in His great love for us, will never force anything of Himself upon us, not even His mercy. All of the gifts of God are offered for acceptance. So while our salvation is indeed secured through the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross, accepting it is still our choice. And it's not a choice we make once, when the warning buzzer goes off and then suddenly we decide to be disciples. The point of the story is that there is no warning buzzer. The narrow gate that Jesus is talking about is a life of discipleship and mercy. A life of discipleship and mercy. It's in being disciples of the one the Master sends that makes us recognizable as the embodiment of His Son within us. Pope Francis declared for us a year of God's mercy. But in reality, God has given us 2,000 years of mercy, an age of mercy. Such is God's great love for His people, broken people in need of mercy. For all those years, the church has taught us that the very best way to receive mercy is to give mercy. On that boat that day, there was love and mercy, not just for a moment, but playing out in the lives of the many. The little boy crying and urging his dad to swim. The three men who offered to swim a lifeline out to the guy. 20 others who, regardless of their feelings for the guy, understood without question that we don't abandon anyone, not even the rude and the arrogant. And this is a boatload of imperfect people. God, however, is perfect. His love is perfect. His mercy is perfect. And so His offer and plan of salvation is perfect. So if the road and the gate to the kingdom are narrow, then this too must be the perfect way to the Master's house. Jesus walked this narrow way, showed us that it can be done, and said, "Come, follow me." It is illusion to think that we are following Jesus, but then not to walk the road that He walked. Choose the narrow road, because the kingdom of God begins here and now on that road. This is where we come to resemble Jesus, by walking the path that He walked. This is where we make the choices that determine how we will spend eternity.